ever wonder what physically holds up the internet? We rely so much on our digital connections, Radar, but behind every swipe, every stream, every video call you make, there's a tangible, often invisible infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking about the unseen pillars that literally allow our digital lives to function.
And today, we're pulling back the curtain on one of the biggest and I think most fascinating players in that absolutely essential infrastructure, American Tower Corporation, you know, AMT.
That's right. We're going to explore what makes this company such a dominant force, the unique strategic choices that really set it apart from its competitors, and the complex landscape. I mean, the mix of opportunities and challenges it navigates every single day.
So our mission in this deep dive is basically to pull out those critical insights, the things that truly matter from all the information we've gathered. Our goal is to make sure you walk away genuinely understanding AMT.
Yeah, it's a core business, its competitive edge, you know, the significant headwinds it's up against right now, and of course, its long-term potential.
We're here to give you the bigger picture, connecting the dots so you're truly well-informed about a company that is quite literally building the future of connectivity.
And to really set the stage for you, it's crucial to understand AMT's dual focus. It's kind of interesting. They have this extensive international expansion strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But they've also made a really significant push into the U.S. data center market.
Right, that CoreSite deal.
Exactly. This unique, almost dual-pronged approach truly sets them apart from their peers. It positions them to capitalize on, well, the insatiable global demand for mobile data, and the exciting convergence of wireless networks with edge computing.
But as we'll unpack, I assume it also introduces considerable risks.
Oh, absolutely. Things like foreign exchange volatility, big one for them, and geopolitical uncertainties. These are critical to understand.
Okay, so what exactly can you expect from our conversation today? We're going to kick things off by laying the groundwork, sort of digging into the fundamentals of the tower business itself, how these essential companies actually operate.
Then we'll pivot to AMT's unique differentiators, that massive global footprint, and their bold, maybe somewhat unexpected, move into data centers.
Right. After that, we'll tackle the macroeconomic and industry-specific headwinds that are impacting, well, the entire sector right now. High rates, slowing CapEx, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And finally, we'll bring it all home by discussing AMT's financial health and what this all means for its future trajectory. You know, pull it all together.
Sounds like a plan. Let's dive in.
Okay, we've thrown around tower REITs a few times.
No,
for those of you who follow this space, beyond the general REIT structure, what makes a communications REIT like American Tower specifically unique? What's the fundamental business model here?
That's a great place to start, because while it's a REIT, it's definitely not renting apartments.
Yeah.
A tower REIT, like American Tower, is essentially a specialized real estate company.
Okay.
They own, operate, and develop communication sites. Now, these are primarily wireless and broadcast towers, the big ones you see, but often also include rooftops and other structures.
Right. Anywhere you can stick an antenna, pretty much. You could really think of them as landlords for the digital age. Instead of traditional properties, they lease vertical space high up on these structures to tenants.
And the tenants are the big carriers.
Their primary customers are the major wireless carriers, the AT&Ts, Verizons, and T-Mobiles you use every day, but also broadcast companies, government agencies, and really anyone else who needs to transmit signals over the airwaves.
So it's pure real estate, but instead of traditional ground-level properties, they're leasing space in the sky. And that simplicity, as you say, it sounds almost basic, but it seems to underpin the immense power of this model, given our reliance on connectivity.
Exactly. And this straightforward yet powerful model generates highly predictable and recurring revenue streams. That's key.
How so?
Well, these come from long-term tenant leases, which typically have initial non-cancelable terms of maybe 5 to 10 years, often with multiple renewal options baked right in.
Okay, so sticky customers. It's very sticky. Revenue is generated in a few key ways. First, there's initial tenant placement. That's when a carrier first installs their equipment on a brand new tower.
Got it.
Then you have co-location. This is when a second, third, or even a fourth tenant adds their equipment to an existing tower. This is where the operating leverage truly kicks in. We should talk more about that.
Definitely. And the third way.
And finally, there are amendments. These happen when an existing tenant upgrades or modifies their equipment, for instance, adding new 5G antennas to boost capacity or coverage, you know, tweaking their setup.
Okay, that operating leverage you just mentioned, that sounds like a really fundamental driver of profitability for this business.
Right.
So once the tower is built, adding a second or third tenant is essentially pure profit. That sounds like incredible leverage.
You've absolutely nailed it. While building a tower from scratch or acquiring an existing one represents a significant upfront capital expense, right? Big investment.
The incremental cost of adding more tenants to that same tower is remarkably minimal. Once the tower is built and the site is operational, adding a second or third antenna array doesn't require nearly as much additional investment in land or permits or the foundational structure. It's already there.
So the margins on those extra tenants must be huge.
Exactly. This means that colocation and amendment revenue are exceptionally high margin. They flow almost directly to the bottom line, driving significant cash flow growth as more tenants share the same physical infrastructure. It's a fantastic example of a shared infrastructure model working at its most efficient.
And beyond just adding new tenants or upgrades, those leases themselves also include contractual rent escalators, right? Providing a kind of built-in organic growth year after year.
That's a crucial point.
Yeah.
In the U.S., these contractual escalators average about 3% annually. That provides a very stable, predictable baseline growth component just ticking up every year.
And internationally?
Internationally, they're often linked to local inflation indices, like the CPI. Which, you know, can be a valuable hedge against rising prices, especially in regions that might have higher inflation rates.
Interesting.
So this combination of long-term contracts, the high operating leverage from colocation, and these built-in escalators creates a very robust and, frankly, resilient business model.
This certainly sounds like a very stable and attractive business. But for our audience, who are the main players in the space, and more importantly, what stops others from just jumping in and competing? It sounds too good to be true, almost.
Huh. Well, you're absolutely right. It is a stable business, largely because of its unique industry structure. The U.S. wireless tower industry, for example, is what we call a functional oligopoly.
Meaning just a few big players dominate.
Exactly. It's dominated by just three publicly traded REITs. American Tower, Crown Castle, CCI, and SBA Communications, SBAC. What creates this highly concentrated market is a formidable economic moat. Essentially, extremely high barriers to entry that make it incredibly difficult for new competitors to emerge and challenge the incumbents.
So it sounds almost impenetrable for newcomers. What exactly is the biggest barrier that protects these companies right now? Is it just cost?
Cost is part of it, but it's more than that. The biggest, most immediate barrier is the sheer difficulty of developing new tower sites. Think about it.
Okay.
You need to find suitable land, first off. And not just any land. It has to be in the exact right geographic location to meet specific radio frequency objectives for the carriers.
Right. Physics dictates the location.
Precisely. Then you have to navigate a complex, often years-long labyrinth of local zoning and permitting regulations. It can be a nightmare.
I can imagine an MBism and all that.
Oh, yeah. And let's not forget, dealing with potential public opposition from local communities, not in my backyard, issues are very real. All of this can delay or completely derail new construction projects.
So that scarcity makes the existing towers incredibly valuable.
Exactly. This scarcity means that in many coverage areas, an existing tower is essentially the only game in town for a carrier, almost like a mini monopoly at each location. And once a carrier installs all their expensive complex equipment on a tower,
they don't want to move it.
Moving it is an operational nightmare and incredibly costly. So they become incredibly sticky tenants. This leads to astonishingly high lease renewal rates. I mean, to think about it, Crown Castle, for example, has reported 98-99% renewal rates.
Wow.
It shows how non-discretionary, how essential these assets are for their customers. Imagine a landlord with a 99% tenant renewal rate. It's unheard of in most real estate sectors.
So, towers need carriers to fill their space, and carriers literally cannot operate their networks without access to these towers. It sounds like a perfect, almost symbiotic match, but I can't help but think there's an underlying tension there, too. Like, who has the upper hand?
It's absolutely a symbiotic relationship, but you're spot on. There's an underlying tension that's always present, a delicate balance of power. Tower companies are fundamentally dependent on the capital expenditure cycles, the CapEx cycles, of the wireless carriers for their growth.
Right. If carriers aren't spending, towers don't grow as fast.
Exactly. When carriers invest heavily in their networks, upgrading to 5G, for instance, tower companies see increased demand for new leases, amendments, and colocations. Conversely, carriers simply cannot operate their networks effectively or provide the coverage and speed we all expect without access to these critical tower infrastructures. They need each other, but each wants the best possible deal, naturally.
And that interdependence also leads to high customer concentration, which I imagine comes with its own set of risks for a tower company like AMT.
It definitely does. This high customer concentration is a key risk factor for the industry, and it's something investors watch very closely. For AMT's U.S. and Canada segment, just three carriers, T-Mobile, AT&T, and Verizon Wireless, together accounted for an aggregate of 86% of revenue in 2024. That's huge concentration.
86% from just three customers.
Yeah. Now, while individual site leases are typically difficult for a carrier to contest or walk away from mid-contract due to that stickiness we talked about, this concentration undeniably gives these large carriers significant bargaining power, particularly during the negotiation of master lease agreements, or MLAs.
What are those exactly?
MLAs are the overarching contracts that set the terms for future business across hundreds or even thousands of sites. They cover things like pricing for new leases, amendments, escalators, the whole framework. So while a carrier might not fight over one tower lease, they can definitely exert pressure when negotiating these big multi-year MLAs.
Gotcha. That makes sense. A lot of leverage in those negotiations. Okay, so we understand the basic tower model. Now, American Tower isn't just big, it's globally big. How does its portfolio truly compare to its peers, like Crown Castle or SBAC? And why did it choose this expansive international path, knowing the complexities involved?
Well, what's truly fascinating here, and maybe its single biggest differentiator, is AMT's unparalleled global scale. As of late 2024, and this was before its recent India sale, which we'll talk about.
Right.
The company operated nearly 149,000 communication sites globally. Just think about that number.
Wow, 149,000. That's enormous.
It is. To give you some context, that included about 42,000 in the U.S. and Canada, and an astonishing 106,000 internationally, spread across Latin America, Africa, Asia, and Europe.
So way more international sites than domestic.
Way more. And this absolutely dwarfs its primary competitors. Crown Castle, for example, is almost entirely a U.S. pure play with just over 40,000 towers total. SBA Communications has about 40,000 towers too, with a more balanced split between U.S. and international, but still significantly smaller than AMT's massive global footprint.
That's a huge difference in scale and strategy. So this strategic divergence is central to AMT's investment thesis then. It's not just about diversification, but a deliberate long-term bet on growth outside the U.S.
Absolutely. This isn't just about, you know, spreading risk. It's a bet that tomorrow's biggest growth stories aren't necessarily in yesterday's saturated markets. Like the U.S., AMT's international strategy is a deliberate choice to diversify away from the more mature U.S. market.
Which is still growing, but maybe not as fast.
Exactly. And expose itself to emerging economies where smartphone penetration and data consumption are in earlier, potentially higher growth stages. They're literally planting their flags in the fastest growing digital frontiers, aiming to capture the kind of exponential, multi-decade growth that the U.S. market saw years ago. It's a bold, long-term play, aiming to tap into those longer, more robust growth curves as digital adoption accelerates dramatically in these regions.
But this global footprint isn't without its own set of challenges, is it? You mentioned complexity. You can't just expand globally without some added headaches that domestic-only players might not face.
You've hit on the other side of that coin perfectly. This diversification definitely comes at the cost of increased operational complexity. I mean, you're dealing with vastly different regulatory environments, business practices, tax laws, economic conditions across dozens of countries.
Right.
You also have heightened geopolitical risk in some regions, which can mean anything from unexpected policy changes to civil unrest impacting operations, unfortunately.
And the currency risk you mentioned earlier must be huge.
Oh, massively significant for AMT. There's significant foreign exchange or FX volatility.
Yeah.
We saw this starkly in the second quarter of 2025, where AMT reported approximately $484 million in foreign currency losses compared to the prior year.
$500 million just from currency swing.
In one quarter, yeah. That's a material impact on net income,
yeah,
and a clear example of the double-edged nature of that global strategy.
Yeah.
Smooths some things out, but introduces this other big variable.
Okay, speaking of unique plays, let's pivot back to something we touched on earlier. American Tower's big move into data centers with CoreSite. Why is this so crucial for a company known primarily for towers? It seems like a pretty distinct business line.
It does, and this raises an important question for many observers.
Yeah.
Why would a tower company get into data centers? It's not immediately obvious. So they acquired CoreSite back in 2021.
Right.
It consists of 29 interconnected data center facilities strategically located in 10 major U.S. markets. Now, this segment accounted for about 9% of AMT's property revenue in 2024, so still smaller than towers.
But growing fast.
Exactly. It's currently seeing robust double-digit growth, really driven by the escalating demand for AI-ready interconnection solutions. It's a significant high-growth differentiator for them compared to the other tower guys.
So it's not just about traditional data storage then, but specifically this AI-related demand and the need for processing closer to the user, that edge concept.
Precisely. The true insight here, I think, is AMT's foresight. They're not just renting space for cell signals anymore. They're laying claim to the physical real estate needed for the future of data processing. The strategic rationale behind the CoreSite acquisition is a long-term bet on the convergence of wireless and wireline networks and the dramatic rise of edge computing.
Okay, unpack that edge computing idea a bit more.
Sure. The core thesis is that cutting-edge applications, things like AI inference, augmented reality, autonomous systems, the Internet of Things, IoT, all these things demand extremely low latency.
Meaning super fast response times. Super fast. Think about it as AI, autonomous cars, and VR demand instant responses. The internet's brain can't be physically far away. This requires computational power and data processing to move much closer to the network edge, meaning closer to where the end users and devices are actually located. You can't have delays.
And with its combined portfolio of towers and data centers, American Tower is really trying to cover all the bases from a real estate perspective for this new digital frontier. It sounds like they're building an interconnected superhighway for tomorrow's technology.
That's precisely it. That's a great way to put it. With its combined portfolio of towers, which you can think of as the far edge of the network, bringing signals out to vast areas, and interconnected data centers, which serve as the metro edge, providing concentrated processing power in urban hubs, AMT is uniquely positioned to build a truly distributed real estate platform.
So towers and data centers working together? Potentially, yes. While CoreSite is still a smaller, albeit rapidly growing, part of the overall business today, it represents a significant high-growth differentiator and a potential new pillar of long-term value creation. It's AMT making a bold and frankly forward-thinking move into the evolving future of network infrastructure, looking beyond just towers to where the next wave of computing will likely take place.
Very interesting strategic pivot. Okay, so we've got the foundation and the differentiators. But the last few years have brought some pretty significant economic turbulence across the globe. How has that impacted American Tower, especially with its expansive global presence and capital-intensive business model?
Yeah, the macro environment has definitely been a factor. The tower business model, despite its inherent stability from those long-term leases, is highly exposed to two primary macroeconomic forces: interest rates and foreign exchange rates.
Let's start with interest rates. How do they hurt a company like AMT?
Well, as incredibly capital-intensive businesses, tower REITs rely heavily on debt to finance their growth, building towers, buying data centers. It all costs a lot. So since 2022, the global environment of rising interest rates has had a dual impact.
Okay, what's the first impact?
First, it directly increases the cost of servicing their floating rate debt, and it makes it significantly more expensive to refinance maturing fixed rate debt when it comes due. That directly cuts into their profitability, their bottom line.
Right. Higher interest expense. And the second impact.
More critically, perhaps, for valuation, higher risk-free rates like the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury increase the discount rate that investors apply when valuing future cash flows.
Meaning future profits are worth less today.
Exactly. This inevitably puts downward pressure on valuation multiples for companies like AMT. It makes their shares appear less attractive compared to safer, higher-yielding government bonds, for example. So it hits their cost of capital and their stock valuation.
And then there's the foreign exchange risk, which you mentioned must be particularly acute for a company with such a vast international footprint, converting all those local currencies back to dollars for reporting.
Absolutely. For AMT, with its huge international portfolio, FX risk is a significant and often differentiating factor compared to its more domestically focused peers like Crown Castle. Revenue and profits generated in foreign currencies, pesos, euros, rand, you name it, have to be translated back into U.S. dollars for financial reporting.
So if the dollar gets stronger?
If the U.S. dollar strengthens significantly against those currencies, which it has at times recently, then those foreign earnings are worth less when they're converted back for the financial statements. It's not necessarily that the underlying business in, say, Mexico performed poorly in pesos, but the reported U.S. dollar earnings take a massive hit. That $484 million foreign currency loss in a single quarter in Q2 2025 isn't just some accounting entry. It's a material factor that investors have to weigh. It directly impacts the company's reported profitability and even its ability to service its dollar-denominated debt. It's a very real, often unpredictable swing factor for a global player like AMT.
Wow. Okay, shifting gears slightly. The 5G rollout felt like a huge boom for the industry, didn't it? With all the carriers upgrading their networks at a rapid pace, is that investment slowing down now that many people have 5G on their phones?
Yes, it is definitely moderating.
Yeah.
Following a period of really intense investment from maybe 2022 to 2023, largely driven by the deployment of C-band spectrum, that crucial mid-band frequency that offers that sweet spot for 5G speed and coverage. U.S. wireless carrier capital expenditures have indeed moderated quite significantly. Total U.S. wireless CapEx is estimated to have declined by a substantial 26% in 2024.
26% drop. It's huge.
It is. And only a modest 2% recovery is projected for 2025. This slowdown in carrier spending directly affects new leasing activity for tower companies like AMT, the sort of gold rush phase of the initial 5G build-out, which involved broad nationwide upgrades, has largely passed.
So what does future growth look like then?
Future growth will be more targeted and surgical. It'll focus on densification, adding capacity in busy areas rather than those large-scale ubiquitous deployments we saw initially. This means towers in prime urban corridors will likely see sustained activity, while others in more rural or less trafficked areas might experience slower growth going forward. The spending becomes more focused.
Okay, another big challenge seems to be when carriers merge. We saw T-Mobile and Sprint. It feels like that would create redundant sites, leading to lease cancellations or churn for the tower companies.
You're hitting on a persistent structural risk for the tower industry. Tenant consolidation. It's always there. When wireless carriers merge, they inevitably rationalize their combined networks to gain efficiencies.
Makes sense.
This often involves decommissioning redundant cell sites, where they might have two sets of antennas close together. And that leads directly to lease cancellations, or churn, for the tower companies who own those sites. The industry has been navigating elevated churn for several years now, primarily due to the T-Mobile-Sprint merger, which AMT actually expects to remain a headwind through 2025.
So that integration is still playing out years later.
It takes time, yeah.
Yeah.
But this isn't a one-time event. It's a continuous process as carriers seek efficiencies.
And it seems like we just had another example of that potential churn with the U.S. Cellular deal, right? T-Mobile buying parts of them.
Precisely. That's a more recent example. T-Mobile announced that deal in 2024 to acquire parts of U.S. Cellular. Now, as part of this transaction, T-Mobile will become an anchor tenant on about 2,000 of U.S. Cellular's 4,400 towers, which is good news for whoever owns those towers. But it creates uncertainty for the remaining 2,400 towers and any sites where both T-Mobile and U.S. Cellular might have been collocated. So it introduces a new, albeit smaller, wave of potential churn for the industry to manage. These types of mergers are a constant dance that tower companies have to anticipate and manage in their forecasts.
Okay, that brings us to the India divestiture. That seems like a really significant move for AMT, especially given its historical focus on global expansion. What was the thinking behind that decision to sell off such a large operation? Was it a sign of weakness or a calculated strategic realignment?
That's a great question. If we connect this to the bigger picture of managing risk and optimizing their global portfolio, the sale of its India operations in September 2024 for approximately $2.2 billion was, I think, a major strategic realignment for American Tower. And it speaks to their disciplined approach to capital.
So why India specifically? It's a huge market.
It is. And while it offers immense long-term population and mobile growth potential on paper, it proved exceptionally challenging for AMT in practice. This was due to a number of factors. Intense carrier price competition driving down lease rates, persistently low tenancy ratios per tower, meaning fewer tenants per tower than ideal to get that operating leverage,
right,
and generally unfavorable contract terms that made it really difficult to generate attractive, consistent returns compared to other regions where they operate.
So it was less about cutting losses, maybe, and more about a strategic reevaluation of where their capital could earn the best, most predictable returns going forward.
Essentially, yes. I'd frame it that way. This divestiture is a significant de-risking move. It simplifies the business, reduces exposure to a highly volatile market that just wasn't performing as expected, and, crucially, allows AMT to reallocate that capital, that $2.2 billion, to regions with more stable and predictable return profiles.
Like where?
Think of markets like Europe, where 5G rollout is still in earlier stages and maybe the contracts are better, or their growing U.S. data center market with CoreSite. It reflects a disciplined approach to capital allocation and a clear acknowledgement that the original strategic thesis for India just didn't materialize as they had anticipated. It's about optimizing the portfolio for better overall returns and reduced risk for the long term.
Makes sense. Sometimes you have to cut bait, even on a big market.
Exactly.
Okay, so despite all these headwinds we've just discussed, I mean, from interest rates and FX volatility to carrier CapEx moderation and churn, where does American Tower find its growth today? What's the engine driving it forward in this evolving environment?
Well, the good news is AMT's organic growth engine is multifaceted and, importantly, quite resilient, even amid the current challenges. In the second quarter of 2025, for instance, the company reported a solid 4.7% growth in organic tenant billings.
Okay, 4.7%. Where does that come from?
It comes from those three core drivers that we touched on earlier. First, you have the contractual escalators. That stable baseline from built-in annual rent increases, averaging 3% in the U.S. and linked to CPI internationally. That's sort of the bedrock.
Right, the automatic growth.
Then second, there's churn, which is the offsetting factor from lease non-renewals or cancellations. This has been elevated recently, as we discussed, but management is actively working to manage it through various lease optimization strategies and negotiations.
Okay, so escalators minus churn. What's the third piece?
The third piece, and most critically for incremental growth, is new business. This primarily comes from amendments, existing tenants, upgrading gear, and co-locations, new tenants adding onto existing towers. This is directly tied to carrier network investment and fueled by the ongoing, albeit evolving, 5G deployment cycle.
So how is 5G still driving growth? I thought the main rollout, that initial big push for coverage, was largely done, especially here in the U.S. What's the next chapter of the 5G story for tower companies like AMT?
That's a great question, and it speaks to the evolving nature of the 5G catalyst. You're right, the initial phase is maturing, but the transition to 5G is definitely a multi-year tailwind that's very much evolving.
Yeah.
That initial phase was indeed about deploying mid-band spectrum, like C-band in the U.S., for broad coverage.
Mm-hmm.
This required carriers to upgrade existing macro tower sites with new antennas and other equipment, driving a significant wave of high-margin amendment revenue. And AMT actually saw broad-based mid-band upgrade activity from its U.S. tenants, even in Q2 2025, indicating that this initial phase is still generating solid revenue.
Okay, so if that initial 5G coverage is largely established, does that mean the biggest growth spurt for tower companies is behind us? Or is there a second act to the 5G story that's still unfolding?
Oh, there's absolutely a second act, and maybe even a third and fourth down the line. The next act is called network densification.
Densification, meaning making the network denser.
Exactly. As 5G mid-band coverage matures, maybe covering between 210 million and 300 million people in the U.S., already carriers now need to add more cell sites. Why?
To handle more traffic.
Precisely. To handle the ever-increasing data traffic, improve network quality, fill in coverage gaps, and boost capacity, especially in high-traffic urban and suburban areas. This drives demand for new collocations on existing towers, which is great for tower owners. And in very dense urban cores, it also drives the deployment of smaller, more localized small cells, though that's more Crown Castle's historical focus.
Okay, so the spending shifts from broad coverage to targeted capacity.
Exactly. This shift means carrier spending is becoming more surgical and ROI-driven compared to the broad nationwide upgrades we saw initially. Towers in prime urban and suburban corridors, where the data demand is highest, will likely see sustained leasing activity, even as the overall pace of nationwide amendment activity moderates. It's about optimizing the network for capacity and quality, not just initial coverage anymore.
Got it. Now, given the India divestiture, how should we think about American Tower's remaining international growth strategy? Is it still a priority, and where are they focusing their efforts now?
Oh, absolutely. AMT's international portfolio remains a significant long-term growth vector, despite the challenges we discussed and the India exit. Many of these international markets are still at a much earlier stage of mobile technology adoption compared to the U.S.
Right. Less mature markets.
Yeah. In Europe, for example, 5G mid-band coverage stands at approximately 55%, maybe a bit more now. That indicates a substantial runway for further network investment as carriers work towards their 2030 rollout targets. There's still a lot of building to do.
And in emerging markets?
In emerging markets across Latin America, Africa, and parts of Asia, carriers are often simultaneously completing their 4G buildouts and beginning targeted 5G deployments. So they're kind of doing both at once.
So AMT can potentially capture growth from multiple technology cycles concurrently there.
That's the idea. It allows AMT to capture growth from 4G upgrades and initial 5G rollouts at the same time, which can effectively help offset any future maturation in the U.S. market over the long term.
So it's definitely a higher growth opportunity internationally, but I imagine it still carries that higher risk profile due to the diverse economic and political landscapes we talked about.
It's definitely a double-edged sword, and you're right to highlight that risk. While it offers higher potential growth, it also comes with higher volatility and market-specific risks. Management has, for instance, guided for low single-digit growth through 2027, specifically in Latin America.
Why so low?
Due to ongoing carrier consolidation, macroeconomic instability in certain countries, and elevated churn in that specific region. It really highlights the inherent higher volatility and market-specific risks in some of these international regions. And that's precisely why the Indie divestiture was seen as a disciplined move, streamlining the portfolio and focusing capital, where returns are more predictable and attractive, even if the potential top-line growth isn't quite as high on paper.
Okay, this brings us back around to CoreSite and their data centers. What's the true long-term vision here, especially with AI exploding in prominence and everyone needing more processing power? How does this fit into AMT's overall connectivity strategy? Is it just diversification or something more integrated?
Well, I think what's truly fascinating here is how American Tower is positioning itself right at the intersection of its traditional towers and its newer data centers, building a truly future-forward growth strategy. Management sees the early phases of AI-related workloads, specifically things like AI inferencing, where the AI makes decisions, and machine learning as a rapidly growing source of leasing demand within its CoreSite data centers today.
So AI is already driving business for CoreSite.
It seems to be, yeah. This isn't just some niche trend. It's potentially a monumental shift that's set to transform countless industries and generate immense demand for computational resources located strategically.
So it's about more than just storing data. It's about processing it incredibly close to where it's generated or needed, especially for these high-demand AI applications, that low latency requirement again.
Exactly. You
yeah.
got it. This trend is the leading edge of a broader shift towards edge computing. The long-term vision is to leverage AMT's distributed real estate platform, their network of towers and data centers, where the towers themselves could potentially function as edge nodes for computational and storage resources.
So computers on the cell towers?
Potentially, or very nearby. It means processing power and data storage are moving much closer to the end users and the devices themselves. This kind of distributed architecture is critical for enabling future low-latency applications, whether it's for advanced AI, the massive growth of the Internet of Things, autonomous vehicles that need instant decision-making capabilities, you name it.
And owning CoreSite gives them a unique advantage there.
It really does. Among its tower REIT peers, AMT's ownership of the CoreSite portfolio gives it a truly unique and strategic advantage in capturing this nascent but potentially transformative opportunity that could define the next decade of connectivity infrastructure. They're playing both the physical pipe game with towers and the local brain game with data centers.
Okay, all this strategy and market talk is fascinating, but how does it translate to the balance sheet? Let's ground this in the numbers. What does American Tower's financial picture really look like right now, and how are they balancing growth, managing that debt, and shareholder returns?
Right, the financials. AMT's performance definitely demonstrates the stability and high profitability inherent in its core tower business model. For the second quarter of 2025, total revenue grew 3.2% year-over-year to $2.63 billion. Not spectacular growth, but solid. And they maintained a robust property gross margin of 74.7%. That's very healthy.
And what about cash flow? You mentioned AFO earlier.
Yes. Adjusted funds from operations, or AFO per share, and again, for REITs, this is the gold standard metric because it strips out non-cash accounting items like depreciation that can really skew traditional net income. It gives us a much clearer picture of the actual cash flow generated by the business.
Okay.
AFO was $2.60 per share for Q2 2025, and that's adjusted for the Indus impact. So it's up 2.4% over the prior year. So again, modest growth reflecting those headwinds like FX, but the consistent generation of significant AFO is paramount to the long-term investment thesis that cash funds everything else.
Okay, what about their debt load? That's often a major concern for companies in capital-intensive industries like this, especially with interest rates where they are today.
That's a very keen observation, and it's absolutely a key area to watch for any investor looking at AMT. The company does have a significant debt load, approximately $37.5 billion in total debt as of June 30, 2025.
$37.5 billion, wow.
Yeah, it's a big number. This puts its net leverage ratio, which is basically net debt divided by annualized adjusted EBITDA, at 5.1x. Now, this is at the upper end of management's stated target range. They usually aim for 3x by 5x. And it's a critical focus for investors, especially with the current high interest rate environment increasing the cost of servicing that debt.
How does that 5.1x compare to peers?
It's elevated, but maybe not out of line. When you compare it to a peer like SBA Communications, which reported a 6.5x leverage ratio in Q2 2025, AMT is actually relatively well-positioned within its peer group. But still, it carries a substantial debt burden that needs careful management and ideally needs to come down over time.
So management has this constant challenge, really, this balancing act between these competing priorities for their capital, funding growth, paying down debt, and returning money to shareholders via dividends.
Precisely. You summed it up perfectly. Management faces a continuous challenge balancing four key capital priorities. First, organic reinvestment, building new towers, upgrading existing ones, expanding data center capacity. For example, they spent $313 million in CapEx in Q2 2025.
Hi.
Second, inorganic growth through M&A, like the $185 million they spent on acquiring a Denver data center in Q2 2025. Third, deleveraging, paying down that $37.5 billion debt pile to reduce risk. And finally, fourth, shareholder returns, primarily through their dividend.
So what's the debate among investors? Delever faster or keep investing?
That's the core debate. Should the company prioritize deleveraging to a more conservative level, maybe getting that ratio comfortably below 5.0x or even closer to 4x? Or should they continue to pursue aggressive growth opportunities, especially in data centers and maybe select international markets, and maintain a strong dividend payout?
What's the likely path?
The optimal path likely involves a balanced approach, which is what they seem to be signaling. Disciplined investment in high-return projects combined with opportunistic, gradual deleveraging over time using free cash flow. This allows them to maintain financial flexibility without completely stifling growth opportunities. It's a tightrope walk.
Okay, so we've dissected the business, the strategy, the headwinds, the financials. But for someone looking at American Tower as an investment, how do you even begin to put a value on a company like this, given all its unique characteristics and the current market environment?
Right. Valuation. The valuation of tower REITs is typically assessed using multiples of cash flow metrics, not traditional price-to-earnings ratios like you might use for a tech company. We primarily look at price-to-FO, PAFO, that adjusted funds for operations we discussed, and also enterprise value to EBITDA. EBITDA.
And why those specific metrics?
These metrics are far more appropriate because they account for the high non-cash depreciation expense that's inherent in real estate businesses. Depreciation can make net income look artificially low, while FO gives you a better sense of the actual cash being generated to pay debt and dividends.
Okay. And historically, how have these tower REITs been valued?
Historically, tower REITs have commanded premium valuations compared to most other REIT subsectors, like offices or malls. This premium was generally justified by their superior long-term growth prospects, driven by that durable contractual revenue from long leases and the powerful secular tailwinds of rising mobile data consumption. Everyone uses more data every year.
But the question now is whether that premium is still justified, right?
That's the central question for today's market. Is that historical premium still justified, given the current headwinds we've discussed, the higher rates, the moderating carrier spending, the FX volatility for AMT specifically?
You mentioned interest rates impacting valuation earlier. Can you elaborate a bit more on how that mechanism works? It's not just about AMT's cost of debt, but how investors perceive the value of these assets relative to other options.
Absolutely. It's a critical link. There's a well-established inverse correlation between long-term interest rates and the valuation multiples for income-oriented equities like REITs.
Inverse meaning when rates go up, valuations go down.
Exactly. Think of it this way. As the yield on risk-free assets, like the 10-year U.S. Treasury note, rises, it increases the risk-free rate of return available to investors in the market. Consequently, investors demand a higher yield, which means they're only willing to pay a lower price or a lower valuation multiple from REITs to compensate them for the additional risk they're taking by investing in a company versus just buying that safe government bond.
So if I can get, say, 4-5% risk-free from a treasury, I need an even higher return from a REIT to make it worth my while.
Precisely. Why would I accept a lower return from a riskier asset, like a REIT stock, when the safe alternative is offering a decent return? This dynamic forces REIT valuations down when rates rise significantly.
And this has significantly impacted tower REITs recently, hasn't it? It's not just American Tower, but the entire sector seems to have faced this valuation pressure.
It absolutely has. The significant increase in interest rates since early 2022 has been a primary driver of what we call multiple compression across the entire tower REIT sector. Valuations have shrunk.
Can you give an example?
Sure. For example, AMT's current price-to-FFO multiple of approximately 18.2x is notably lower than its five-year average, which typically sat comfortably in the range of, say, 23x to 25x AFFO.
That's a big drop in the multiple.
It is. This market-wide repricing of risk, driven by higher rates, explains a significant portion of the decline we've seen in tower REIT share prices over the past couple of years. It's not necessarily a reflection of fundamental business deterioration. The towers are still humming, but rather a fundamental change in how the market values these long-duration assets in a higher interest rate environment where capital simply costs more and safer alternatives look more attractive.
Okay, so given everything we've discussed, the global scale, the FX risk, the data centers, the leverage, the rate environment, what does the market currently think of American Tower's unique strategy? Is it seen as deserving a premium valuation or maybe a discount compared to its peers, given all these factors and complexities?
That's really the crux of the investment decision, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This raises the important question for investors trying to price the opportunity and risk embedded in AMT. Does its current market price reflect an appropriate premium or perhaps a discount for its distinct strategy compared to, say, a more focused U.S. tower pure play?
What factors might argue for a premium?
Well, on one hand, you could certainly argue for a potential premium. Its unmatched global scale offers diversification benefits. That diversification into potentially higher growth international markets, even with the risks, could be valuable. And its unique positioning in edge computing through CoreSite is a potential long-term growth driver that peers don't have. All these could justify a higher valuation multiple. It's a bigger, more complex, but potentially higher growth, more future-proof story.
But there are also factors on the other side, right? Factors that could warrant a discount or at least temper that premium, things that might make it seem riskier to some investors.
Exactly. On the other hand, a valuation discount, or at least a smaller premium, could be warranted. Why? Because of its higher leverage, currently at that 5.1x level, which is definitely elevated in this rate environment. There's also its direct exposure to volatile foreign exchange rates, which adds earnings uncertainty. We can't forget the heightened geopolitical and operational risks that come with operating in some emerging markets. And just the overall complexity of its business model compared to a U.S. pure play peer like Crown Castle. Especially after Crown Castle's recent decision to divest its fiber and small cell businesses to become an even more focused tower pure play.
So simpler might be better in some investors' eyes right now.
It could be. The market's current pricing of AMT stock, wherever it happens to be trading, is essentially its collective judgment on this delicate balance of opportunity versus risk. And that judgment, reflected in the valuation multiple, can and does shift constantly with economic data, industry news, and company performance. It's a moving target.
Wow. Okay. We've covered a tremendous amount of ground today, really peeling back the layers on American Tower. Let's try to bring it all together now. Based on everything we've discussed, what are the key takeaways for you, our listener, about American Tower's growth prospects, its inherent risks, and its strategic position in the evolving world of connectivity?
All right, let's synthesize. Based on our deep dive, here's a summary addressing the core questions facing a potential long-term investor in American Tower. First, the big one. Is the growth sustainable?
Yeah, can they keep growing?
The answer appears to be yes, growth looks sustainable, but it's definitely moderating from those peak 5G deployment years we saw. The growth engine is strategically shifting. It's moving away from relying solely on broad nationwide amendments towards more targeted densification efforts and colocation wins. Combine that with the potential from earlier stage international markets, despite their volatility and CoreSite's unique edge computing potential, and it seems to provide a durable, maybe mid-single digit organic growth runway for the foreseeable future.
Mm.
So growth, yes, but maybe not explosive growth like in the past.
Got it. And what about those key risks we discussed earlier? What are the biggest hurdles AMT needs to clear consistently?
The key risks remain primarily macroeconomic and industry specific. Sustained high interest rates are probably the most significant threat right now. They increase AMT's cost of capital and put that valuation pressure on the stock, as we just discussed.
Right.
Continued carrier consolidation, like the T-Mobile US Cellular deal, potentially leading to more churn, poses a direct risk. It could also enhance tenant bargaining power during those critical MLA negotiations down the road.
And for AMT specifically?
For AMT specifically, because of its global footprint, geopolitical instability and adverse foreign exchange movements are material and often unpredictable risks tied directly to their international strategy. That's a risk peers don't face to the same degree.
What about new tech, like satellites? Are they a threat?
That's a common question. Disruptive technologies like low Earth orbit, LEO satellites, think Starlink, exist, but they are generally not seen by industry experts as a material threat to the macro tower model for providing terrestrial mobile coverage in the next, say, 3 to 5 years. This is largely due to cost, capacity limitations, and technical hurdles for broad consumer mobile use cases compared to established cellular networks. Satellites serve different needs right now.
Okay, good clarification. So how well positioned is American Tower to truly benefit from emerging technologies and the next wave of network densification, particularly with AI and IoT accelerating?
I'd say exceptionally well positioned, actually. Its vast portfolio of existing macro towers is still the most economically efficient solution for carriers to execute that next phase of 5G densification, which will require far more localized coverage and capacity than the initial rollout.
And CoreSite adds another layer.
It adds a very strategic layer. Furthermore, its ownership of the CoreSite data center portfolio provides that unique and powerful advantage over its peers. This positions AMT to capture future demand for edge computing infrastructure as AI and the Internet of Things proliferate, requiring that processing power much closer to the source of data generation. They're really playing both the physical pipe game with the towers and the local brain game with the data centers. It's quite compelling strategically. Mm-hmm. And that optimal capital structure, the balancing act between managing debt, funding growth, and maintaining shareholder returns, how does that look for AMT right now? Is there a clear path? That's still very much a strategic debate that management is actively navigating.
Yeah.
And investors are watching closely. The current net leverage of 5.1x is manageable, as we said, but certainly elevated, especially in a high-rate environment.
So what are the options?
Well, a more conservative approach would prioritize deleveraging using cash flow to pay down debt and get that ratio towards the lower end of their target range, maybe closer to 3x by 5x. This would reduce financial risk and potentially lower their future cost of capital.
But that might mean less growth investment.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
That's the trade-off. The company is also actively pursuing high-return growth opportunities, particularly internationally and within CoreSite, and it aims to maintain shareholder returns through its dividend. So the optimal path, as we discussed, likely involves a balanced approach. Disciplined investment in the best projects combined with opportunistic, gradual deleveraging over time. They need to show progress on debt reduction without choking off promising growth avenues.
Finally, let's revisit the international exposure. How should investors, or even just interested observers, really think about AMT's international operations and all those currency risks? Is it ultimately worth the headache for the potential growth?
Yeah, it's a key question. Investors should probably view the international portfolio as a long-term growth option that undoubtedly comes with significant near-term volatility and complexity. On the plus side, it provides crucial diversification from the more mature U.S. market. It offers access to regions with compelling long-term demand drivers for mobile data, regions that are years, if not decades, behind the U.S. in terms of mobile adoption and network build-out.
But the downsides are real.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This comes at the cost of direct exposure to currency fluctuations, which can materially impact reported earnings in unpredictable ways, and those heightened geopolitical and operational risks we mentioned. However, the recent India divestiture shows, I think, a disciplined approach to managing that portfolio. It shows they're willing to optimize capital allocation in exit markets that aren't meeting their long-term return thresholds, which should give investors some comfort. They aren't just chasing flags on a map blindly.
Okay, that's a great synthesis. Now, for those who want to keep an eye on American Tower's pulse, maybe track its progress quarter by quarter, what are the most important leading indicators to watch? What should you monitor?
All right, if you want to gauge the health and trajectory of AMT's business, you should monitor these key indicators closely each quarter. First, look at U.S. and Canada organic tenant billings growth. This is the primary measure of the core tower business's health in its largest and most mature market.
Okay, core U.S. growth. What else?
Second, new leasing application volumes. These can be a crucial forward-looking indicator for future amendment and co-location activity, basically. How much new business is potentially coming down the pike?
Future demand signal. Got it.
Third, international churn rates, especially in potentially volatile regions like Latin America. This helps assess regional stability and any potential drags on overall revenue growth.
How CoreSite is doing.
Exactly. Fourth, CoreSite leasing and interconnection revenue growth. You need to track the performance of this key strategic differentiator to see if that edge computing bet is paying off.
What about their customers?
Good point. Fifth, keep an eye on the quarterly capital expenditure guidance from major U.S. carriers like Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. Their spending plans are the most direct indicator of future customer demand across the entire U.S. tower sector.
Makes sense. And finally.
Sixth, monitor the net leverage ratio. Track the company's balance sheet health and its progress, or lack thereof, on deleveraging. This is absolutely critical in a higher interest rate environment and impacts their financial flexibility. Watching these six things should give you a pretty good handle on how AMT is navigating the current landscape.
Wow, what an incredible deep dive into the complex yet absolutely foundational world of American Tower Corporation. It's really clear that behind every single connection we make, every bite of data that flies through the air, there's a fascinating story of strategic decisions, technological evolution, and constant adaptation by companies like AMT. They are truly building the physical backbone of our digital lives.
Indeed. American Tower really exemplifies how essential infrastructure, even in its most established forms like a steel tower, continues to evolve and face entirely new challenges and opportunities in the digital age. Its unique blend of massive global reach and that ambitious edge computing strategy through CoreSite truly sets it apart, making it a critical player to understand in the broader telecommunications and technology landscape.
So here's a final provocative thought for you, our listener. As our digital lives become even more deeply intertwined with things like AI, immersive experiences, and ever faster data demands, how much closer to you, physically closer, will the infrastructure of the internet need to get? And who will own and operate those new crucial digital outposts, whether they're on towers, lampposts, or in neighborhood data hubs that power our future? The future of connectivity isn't just happening on our screens. It's literally building itself around us, one tower and one data center at a time.
A fascinating question to ponder.
Thank you so much for joining us on another deep dive. We hope you found this exploration of American Tower insightful, and we encourage you, as always, to keep exploring the stories behind the headlines.